Chapter 2. Looking Forward. Josie, 2022.
Dear Uncle Andy, how are you? I hope that things are good in Thailand. It's really cold here, but it should be spring soon. Do you remember Cliff House?
Josie put her pen down and went to the sitting room to see if her mother was okay. Mum was on the sofa, in her pyjamas, just staring at the TV. The medicine that she was taking for depression made her like this.
Would you like a cup of tea?
Josie asked her. Mum nodded. Josie went into the kitchen and started to make the tea. Then she texted Gareth. She and Gareth had been together for 3 months. She tried not to think about how he was with their friend, Maya. It was nothing. Everything was fine, she told herself. The kitchen was untidy, but Josie worked hard to keep control. Since the age of 13, she had looked after Mum and herself. Sanara, Gareth, and all her other friends could go home after school and say, "What's for dinner?" They did not have to worry about finding money to buy bread. Their bathrooms were clean and their clothes washed, but Josie had to do everything for herself and for Mum. Mum never left the house or opened the door to people. All this meant that Josie did not have time to study. After she had given Mum her tea, Josie went back to writing her letter. She had never met Andy, but now she was writing to him all the time. Perhaps this letter would make him come home. He was Mum's big brother and the only family that they had. Sometimes she asked Lucy, who lived next door, for help. But that was only sometimes. Now Josie was 16 and studying for her GCSEs. She wanted to go to university, to move far away. She wanted to meet new people. She wanted a new life. Perhaps Andy had felt the same, because he had moved to Thailand in 1988 and he had never come back. He sent a postcard once a year. Josie sent him letters every few weeks, but she never received a reply. Maybe one day Andy would read them all and fly home to Cornwall. Andy would understand Mum's illness because he had known her as a child. Mum had depression. That was such a little word for such a big, heavy thing, and Josie found it hard to talk about with her friends. When they said that they were depressed because they had not done their homework, it made her cry. Sometimes, when Mum was feeling better, she changed out of her pyjamas, cleaned the house, and hugged Josie. But it never lasted for long. Josie's phone rang. It was Gareth.
"Hi, baby," he said. "Shall we meet up?"
Josie wished that she did not like Gareth so much. She wondered if he called everybody baby or babe to stop himself saying the wrong name. He did not know about her letters to Andy. He knew about Mum's depression, but not how bad it was. Only Sanara knew that. As Josie walked to meet Gareth, she thought about how he talked to Maya at school, in a way that a boy with a girlfriend probably should not. But when he saw Josie now, he opened his arms and kissed her, and then they walked to the beach hand in hand. Gareth had finished making his film, with the bone and everything that they had said about Mrs. Roberts and Lucy's sister who had disappeared. They had shown it to a few friends, But then Sonara made them delete it from their phones, because she was now friends with Mrs. Roberts. One day, all Josie's friends would go to college or university or leave Cornwall because there were no jobs. They would go and Josie would stay. Unless her uncle came back. Martha, 1940. Martha Driscoll stood in the village hall and watched the lady with the kind eyes.
Choose me, choose me, choose me, Martha thought.
She tried not to cry. She had a label on her coat with her name and address, and she was carrying a gas mask and a suitcase. Martha was 10, and because of the war, she had been evacuated, sent far, far away from home in London to a place that was safe. At last, the lady stood in front of her.
Hello, said the lady. You're pretty. Who are you?
Martha Driscoll, she whispered.
I'm Violet Roberts. Would you like to live at my house?
Yes,
Martha said, quickly. We'll write to your family and tell them that you're safe, Violet said, and she hugged Martha. I have to choose 4 children. It's such a strange thing to do.
Martha could not imagine a home that was big enough for 4 extra people. She wondered if they would all sleep on the floor or in the kitchen under the table. Next, Violet chose Betty, who was Martha's friend, Michael, who was only 6, and Roy, a strong boy who would be able to help in the garden. As they all walked to Violet's house through the dark streets, it was very quiet, and Martha missed the noise of London. They turned a corner, and suddenly there was the ocean, alive and noisy, as it crashed onto the beach. Martha stopped and stared. Above her head, the night sky was full of stars. They continued walking until they saw a sign on a gate that said, Cliff House. There was a little cottage next to the gate. Cliff House was as huge as a castle, and it stood on the top of a cliff. The garden around it was as big as a park.
Welcome to Cliff House, Violet said. I hope that you'll be happy here.
Sonara, 2022. Mum arrived back from work just as I was going out to visit Martha. Like everyone else in our village, Mum did not like Cliff House, and she was surprised that I kept going there. But at least Martha actually lived in the cottage, unlike the rest of her family, who had left the big house empty for years. And she had never called us peasants. Martha was expecting me. I made her some tea with lemon and cut us 2 large pieces of the cake that she had ordered online using voice control on her phone. We talked about her family. Her only son, Leon, had died, but she had a grandson, Alex, who sometimes visited from Devon but never stayed. Felicity, her granddaughter in London, had not been to visit for 3 years. Felicity's second husband was called Dylan, and their little boy was Jackson. But it was Felicity's daughter, Clementine, who interested me the most. She was the one who had called us peasants.
Clem is doing her GCSEs this summer too, Martha told me. And then I have a plan to make the family come back here for the holidays. I'd like you to meet them.
Then she asked, "Do you have a boyfriend?"
"No, I never meet anyone who makes me feel excited in that way," I replied.
"You might find somebody one day," Martha said, "or you might not."
I smiled. Martha was the only person I knew who thought that you could have a happy life without a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Then she sent me upstairs to the second bedroom to look for a special blue dress which she had worn when she met the love of her life, Barnaby Campion, at a dance in 1949. She married him because she loved him and wanted to look forward, not back, she told me.
When I went into the bedroom, I was shocked to see that it looked like a fashion museum, because Martha had kept all of her old clothes.
"I didn't want to give anything away," she said, when I went back downstairs with the blue dress. "That's my whole life up there, you see."
Our GCSEs were finished, and we were on the beach. Josie was playing her guitar. Sometimes, when she needed money to buy food, she played in the streets in Penzance. She was not going out with Gareth anymore, and she had cut her long hair short and made it blonde. She looked so cool. Now Gareth was sitting with his arm around his new girlfriend, Maya. The fire we had made was dying, and we had no more wood.
"Sonara!"
Someone was calling my name. I looked around and saw a tall, slim girl with long blonde hair and expensive clothes walking across the beach towards us. She was carrying two bags, one big, one small.
"Hi, everybody," said Clem.
I knew that it was her because Martha had photos of all her London family.
"Hi," said Gareth.
"Do you need some wood for the fire?" Clem asked, holding up the smaller bag, which was filled with small pieces of wood.
She spoke like somebody from the royal family.
"Fantastic," said Gareth, smiling at her.
"I've got wine too," she said,
giving Gareth a naughty smile, then sitting down next to me and Josie. She took a tin out of her bag, which was full of small chocolate cakes. Josie took one.
"These are amazing," Josie said.
She still did not know who this girl was.
"I'm Clem. My mum's a baker," she said. "I live up at the big house."
Everyone was quiet for a moment, and then they started introducing themselves and asking her questions, except me.
"I'm here for the summer," Clem explained.
She turned to me.
"Grandma thinks that you're wonderful, Sonara. Can I be your friend too?"
When Josie started playing her guitar again, Clem whispered to me,
"Can you come and see me tomorrow? Mum and I want to talk to you about Grandma."
"Is Martha okay?" I asked, feeling worried.
"She's just acting strangely. We want to check that she's okay, in here," Clem said, touching her head. "She texted Mum, and that's why we came. Mum thinks that Grandma is going to change her will. But why now? She's 92.
Clem gave me a hard look. I remembered Martha's words. "I have a plan to make the family come back here for the holidays."
"Grandma talked about giving Cliff House back to the community," Clem continued. "What's the community going to do with it? Fill it with people on drugs? And where would they find the money to continue looking after the house?
It seemed that Martha's family had only returned because they were worried about her will. Perhaps Martha would not leave Cliff House to them when she died, as they had expected. Clem was still talking.
Uncle Alex hates Cliff House for some reason. He never stays. So the house will come to my mum and me.
The number one rule of the summer is to keep Grandma alive until we know her plans.
Perhaps we had been right. Clem was horrible. So, come tomorrow at 1 o'clock and have some lunch. We can have a swim too.
Clem finished with a big smile. And I agreed.